it's weird to have like a paper thing where you're thinking it, okay, in 5 years or something, I should be able to do X, Y, or Z, but you have practically none of that spending power or access today.
Today's guest is my anonymous friend who we'll call Dave. Dave is worth around $100 to $150 million. However, the vast majority of his net worth is in privately held companies, which means they are illiquid. Despite his huge success in multiple businesses, Dave is living on a relatively modest income, an income that doesn't quite fully cover his monthly expenses.
I have to pull a very small amount from the overall net. Regular income is like $500 to $600 a year, pull like $150 to $200 a year.
However, Dave spends a lot. He has a full-time chief of staff, multiple assistants, and all types of household help to the point where he basically only focuses on friends, family, and work. I wanted to understand why he's living like that. And as it turns out, a lot of it comes down to the confidence and willingness to bet on himself. And betting on himself has actually become a pretty significant part of his finances recently.
I have made the decision in the last like 18 months, this is somewhat of a recent thing, to like massively overinvest in my wife and I as like a unit. I'm overinvesting in angel opportunities that I think are good. We have a personal assistant, an EA, and a chief of staff that all work for us.
In this episode, we're going to look at Dave's portfolio. We're going to look at his liquid portfolio as well as his huge illiquid portfolio and his investments. We're going to ask why he does it this way and how this impacts his life. The reason why this episode interests me is because Dave is super interested in overinvesting in himself. And he's very systematic about it. He refers to it as an experiment. And so we're going to learn a ton about that. And as usual, we're going to get super specific about the numbers. I'm Sam Parr, and this is MoneyWise. There's a ton of podcasts and resources out there that teach you how to become wealthy, but none that teach you how to handle the life changes that wealth brings. I'm the co-founder of Hampton, a community where we focus on exactly that. Hampton's a community with founders and CEOs who run businesses anywhere from $2 to $200 million a year in sales. And I'm able to see all types of conversations that these people have behind closed doors. And that community and those conversations is what has inspired this podcast. With MoneyWise, we talk to high net worth people and we discuss problems that rarely discuss publicly, and we're radically transparent about the numbers while we do it. Dave's confidence in himself and his finances is relatively new, but his foundation for his relationship with money was actually one of anxiety.
One of my like early formative money memories was when I was like 10. My dad took the family of 7 kids, then my parents, out to dinner and like freaked out when there was a 50-cent charge for Parmesan cheese that was added to the final bill. Like freaked out, like stood up, asked to talk to the manager. And between that, like between the financial crisis, like he lost his job. Yeah, my parents were super, super, super uptight on money my entire upbringing.
Did you say 7 kids?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't blame them for being uptight a little bit, right?
Yeah. I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying it was definitely a reality of our household, was a lot of like money stress.
But was it self-induced? Should they have stressed out?
Somewhat. I think that like it was somewhat self-induced. But also I'm sure it's like wildly stressful working a job and having 7 kids to support.
Yeah, definitely. And is that what kind of made you want to start businesses?
I think that I probably saw a lot of my dad during my upbringing, like consistently doing things and working jobs that he just like didn't like because they paid decently or pretty well. My sort of model of money growing up was like, it forces you to do stuff you don't like all the time and a lot of it. And it's very stressful when you don't have it. And so I think that both of those things were reasons why I decided I wanted to like start businesses and try and like have control, my financial and time freedom.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to start things because I wanted to have power, not money, in the sense that I didn't want to have power over other people, but I didn't want anyone to have power over me. And yes, it's all rooted in the same thing of like my parents behaving a certain way. And I was like, I don't want to behave that way, or I don't want anyone to have control over me like they do.
Exactly. That's exactly how I felt as well.
Dave's first taste of financial freedom was in his early 20s.
I had a smallish liquidity event when I was 23, when a company that I was part of, like we got acquired by Rockwell Automations, made like 100-ish grand.
And then 5 years later was his first big event.
My first real liquidity was like 28 when I took secondary in my company.
How long into the company were you able to take secondary?
almost 3 years, actually. So it was relatively fast.
That is fast. I mean, were you surprised that someone wanted to buy your shares that soon into the business?
I was. It was also a pretty competitive deal. Like, we had a company that was like growing fast. We had multiple offers. We were profitable, so we didn't need to take money. And the firm that we ended up working with just wanted to write, you know, a check of a certain size, and the company didn't need the size of check that they wanted to write. And so it ended up that we were able to take, you know, almost half of our round in secondary, which was really nice at the time.
And that was like $3.5 million?
About 4.5 for me.
4.5 for you. And then what, 3 million went into the business? 4 million went into the business?
Yeah, so we did 16 total. So my co-founder and I took 8, and then 8 went into the business.
I mean, that's pretty life-changing, right? Do you remember what were you paying yourself at the time? Like $150,000 a year?
No way, dude. We were bootstrapped. We raised 700 grand. So I was paying myself 80 grand a year, you know, and had been for 2 years, and was sort of living off of like Udemy income and some other like income streams that I had like spun up over the years. So it was completely life-changing. Like, I went from having nothing and having to like have these little side hustles to cover my monthly burn to like effectively could retire, which was wild.
At the time of his exit, Dave's monthly burn was just
probably 5 to 6 grand,
which is funny for an $80,000 salary, given 2 episodes ago we spoke to Cam, a guy who's worth around $150 million that has the same monthly burn. Dave, however, did adjust, and he did start spending more, although he did it very slowly.
I like talked to people that had done a similar thing and like had gotten liquidity and made money, and just was like, okay, what are the different pieces of advice? Run them down. Like, I've got really good advice. Like, everyone was like, don't change your lifestyle too much for at least a year. Do not invest in anything for like 6 months. Let it settle before you like start to do anything. And I definitely did that, which I think was very good advice.
In a little bit, we're going to break down his current monthly expenses. But first, let's do a deep dive into how much he's worth and where all the money's coming from. We're going to start with the business that he made $4.5 million from. It has continued to grow and is now worth significantly more.
150 to 200, something in there.
This means that the equity that he still has left in the business, the equity that he didn't sell, has grown significantly.
I mean, yeah, probably like 60 to 100.
And there's another similarity to Cam.
I also got very lucky. Like, I was very into crypto quite early, and so sold a bunch of that in 2019 and 2021.
Although, unlike Cam, Dave didn't have to go searching for a hard drive to find the crypto. Dave also took a lot of the earnings that he made from his secondary sale, and he reinvested the money.
It's been a very good market over the last 6 years since I took secondary, and so that helps.
Have you been able to surpass 10 million in liquid-ish?
Yeah.
So then that probably gave you massive, like, all right, I can breathe.
Yeah, a lot. It'd be amazing if at some point there was like some outcome that would be really life-changing, but for all intents and purposes, like, I'm so good.
How does it feel to know that you have that much wealth, but only a fraction of it is actually spendable?
It's definitely weird. It's weird to think about things, financial decisions that feel consequential, like it might be true in 24 months, just like don't matter at all. You know what I mean? Like, I think
no,
about this
I don't
from,
know. What do you mean?
If you think about from an angel investing standpoint, for example, or like buying a house, like there are houses that I could buy now that would feel like a stretch that 18 or 24 months from now, if there was some like sort of liquidity event, they would basically not matter. There's even like angel investing, I think about this, where there's practically no companies you can invest in that with the small amount of liquidity you have now relative to the total, that will make a difference in your life 10 years down the line, which is just kind of weird. It feels like I like, it's a kind of a mind fuck sometimes.
What's weird about that?
It's hard to make decisions that are based on with so much uncertainty in the future. Like, there's some future where that amount could be massively valuable, and there's some future where like that could literally be a zero. Like, who knows? It's early stage private company. Like, these things go to zero all the time. I obviously don't think it will happen, but it's weird to have like a paper thing where you're thinking it, okay, in 5 years or something, I should be able to do X, Y, or Z, but you have practically none of that spending power or access today. You know what I mean?
Does that make you anxious? It always made me anxious it made me anxious because I was like, what happens if, so I had a newsletter and I'm like, what happens if Gmail changes? I'm screwed. Or in your case, I don't know, what happens if one of your vendors goes out of business or a key, for me, it was always a key employee. If a key employee quit, there was so many times where I got the Slack of like, can we talk? And I was just like, I'm poor now. That's like legitimately how I felt. Do you know what I mean? Where it wasn't like the most anti-fragile company.
Yeah, totally. I feel the same way. That's very, I will say though, it doesn't really make me that anxious. I feel very strongly like I've already gotten more out of it than I ever thought I would. I feel like incredibly blessed with where I'm at. You know, even outside of the business, like I've had a bunch of other things that have done well. And so I don't feel a deep sense of stress or anxiety as much as it's just like, that'd be really cool one day, you know? But I'm also like not totally sure how much my life would change because I've met enough successful people that I think I don't necessarily anchor very strongly to the idea that like more money equals like happiness or anything like that. But it's also like in a weird way, at least most of the assets, I would rather not own anything else. Like there's liquidity that you can get from public stuff, but some of the assets that I have, I'm like, I think could be worth 5 times more in the next 2 years.
Which means that you think they could double.
Yeah, easily. And like, I don't see anything in the public markets that I feel like could do that right now.
I think it's just as hard as running a company. You got to like go and like spend all your days seeking it out. And particularly if that's not your skill set, I think that's stupid. I mean, is that how you think about it? Because we have a mutual friend and he was like, why would you take this money out of your company? Your company's growing like 80% a year. And I was like, well, to de-risk it. And he was like, well, but once you have that money, you're just going to invest it into stocks and bonds, which is just 7%. So you're actually losing money by taking it out of the business. And that was the first time that it hit me. And I'm like, oh my God, you're right. Even though emotionally that's quite hard because I'm like, but this company could go away. That kind of changed my perspective. Do you know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah, I totally know what you mean. I mean, this is why I've like turned down opportunities to sell secondary and other stuff like this in the last 5 years. I don't think it's a good decision.
All right, hold tight for a second. We've got a lot to cover, including a really in-depth, detailed breakdown of his assets. But we've got to take a quick break for our sponsor. We'll be right back.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
All right, so I still want to dive a little bit deeper and figure out which of his assets are liquid, which aren't, and where they're all sitting. But there's something we've got to cover first, and that's why he's so confident in his own businesses and investment choices. And the reason why this is interesting is I know firsthand when you make a large amount of money early on, particularly from your own businesses, it's actually very anxiety-inducing figuring out how to invest it and to make sure you're making those right decisions. You've worked so hard to accumulate something, and you don't want to blow it. And I know for me and a lot of my friends and a lot of people on this podcast, the idea and anxiety of all that money going away after you work so hard, that's a ton of stress. And a lot of times, the skill set needed to start and grow a company and then eventually exit it, that's not really the same skill set as being a really good investor. So to have that much money in illiquid investments, particularly illiquid investments in which you control, you have to have a ton of confidence in your ability to get a good return and to not lose it all. But even though Dave sounds confident, and I think he is confident, he's an amazing entrepreneur, he wasn't always this confident.
Dude, it's so funny. I would not view myself as a confident person, honestly, is one thing I would say.
Why?
When I think about doing something new, like if you were in my head when I'm thinking about that new thing, I'm like so much hedging and uncertainty and like, am I good enough? I would say that I work with a lot of very talented people. I think one thing I'm very good at is building talented teams. And whenever I work with talented people, I'm like, man, I don't really have any hard skills. Like if everything falls apart, like I don't really know what I would like do. I would just start new stuff and hopefully that continues to work.
When you say you're not confident though, you sound super confident. I mean, I think you're a very confident person. You said you have faith that these things are going to work out. So like what's an example of low confidence that you're not as good as the people you hire?
Maybe an example is like the first company that I started. In every point in that journey,
especially early on, I have felt like I don't know how big this can get and like thinking much more from like a scarcity mindset mentality. And only in the last like 2 years do I feel like I've actually changed my mindset and been like, I have utmost conviction that like this is a good asset to own for a long period of time. And this trend is going to keep going. And we're like doing a great job operating and we're going to continue doing that.
So what switched?
I think two things. Having enough liquidity where you're like somewhat insulated from taking some of these risks.
What number was that for you? What number had to cross?
About 10.
So once you crossed $10 million amongst index crypto and VC, you were like...
Across liquid, non-private company stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that was part of it. And then also I think that there was like, I like did some self-work and I got to a point where I was like, okay, I have a good track record. And then at a certain point, I could look back and be like, okay, things I've started have sold like $500 million in sales in the last like 8 years. Like it's okay for me to feel good about that. Just sort of let myself feel that as opposed to like being so hard on myself all the time, which I think helped.
What was the self-work?
The honest answer is like my now wife and I just had a lot of conflict early in our relationship. And like the things that we did to work through how to communicate better, how to better, have a better relationship, like meant doing a lot of self-work. So like worked with a therapist, coach, did journaling, did psychedelic therapy, did a bunch of things. And like across all those modalities for years, got to a place that I think is, I feel really happy with right now.
It's sort of the cherry on top, which means it's not like that important, but it is cool. But basically, I think that the best financial decision a lot of people can make is having a good spouse.
Dude, 100%. I meet so many people that are well off, wealthy, and they're focused on building another company to like be happy as opposed to like finding an amazing spouse or partner for them. And I just think that's like the wrong thing to focus on. Like my wife and I is like, it has been the best thing for my growth, personal development, and also like unbelievable for happiness and relationships. Just like everything in my life has gotten better from making that one choice, like really a 10 out of 10.
It's still important to remember, and in my opinion, this is a very relieving feeling. It's still important to remember that the people who have their act together, the people who are achieving greatness, they experience a ton of self-doubt just like the rest of us.
There are definitely still days where I'm like, fuck, I don't know if I'm good at this stuff. Like I'm still running companies and building them and these things are just indefinite. Like they're hard forever. There are days where I'm like, I fucking suck at this still. I've gotten better at like not being so hard on myself. But there's definitely days where I'm like, I literally have no idea what I'm doing and I kind of suck.
That's a very important thing for you, the listener, to understand is that the people who you admire, the people who you want to be like, they're just like you. They still doubt themselves on a regular basis. Dave says it's only been within like the past 2 years that he's felt this way, which also actually coincides with his decision to invest heavily in himself. That decision is fascinating and potentially my favorite part of this conversation with Dave. However, I'm going to put a pin in it just for a second and get to the other thing I promised. A deeper dive into his liquid and illiquid assets.
What would you say, what percentage of your portfolio is liquid versus in illiquid privately held companies?
I would say about 20% is liquid.
That's pretty good, right? For a lot of people, it's like 1%.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's hard. I think you go to bed stressed out. And I think that with loss aversion, you'd be better off only making the salary and never having the paper versus having the paper and it going away. Do you know what I mean?
Totally. Totally.
And your portfolio, I think, is more complicated than mine. So if you looked at my net worth, it's basically three different equities. I own VOO, so just your normal index fund. I own HubSpot and I own Airbnb. I have like this weird rule, which I don't think is wise, but I don't sell any stock. I'm like, I'll die with it. And then I have like some combination of bonds. So it's like a very typical like bonds and index kind of portfolio. Yours is way different, isn't it? What's yours like?
Yeah, way different.
I want to know what the breakdown is.
Yeah, yeah. So portfolio in general is 25% stocks.
Individual stocks or index?
Mostly index, yeah. With the occasional individual stock, about 40% crypto split between like venture and liquid crypto.
And you've had a good month. You've doubled.
Yeah. I've had a good 10 years in that asset class. About 10% in venture. And then 20% in random angel startup stuff.
For the venture, that's just in other...
other venture funds.
And then, but you forgot real estate.
Yeah, you're right. So that's like 2% roughly.
Well, if I had to guess, your home is worth somewhere around $2 million. And then you bought a building.
You're right. Yeah. So that's unincluded. Yeah. So real estate, I guess, would be 1/8 basically. So what is that? 16%?
And you got that sweet 3% mortgage, I bet.
Yeah. 2.9, baby.
This does not include the illiquid stuff. And you have a handful of companies. Roughly how many companies do you have do you consider like valuable?
Five.
And one of them is worth something like low 9 figures.
Yeah.
What do you think the other four collectively are worth?
They're relatively young, so it's hard to say, but probably collectively 50, something like that.
Of which, how much do you think you own about those?
60%, something like that.
All right, so you're looking at like somewhere around 9 figures, $100 million in privately held companies, and it could be substantially more depending on the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and it could be zero too, you know.
Obviously, compared to the average person, Dave is absolutely killing it, both illiquid and liquid assets. But looking at his own net worth, he's got a lot of money tied up in privately held companies that he can't really cash out whenever he wants. And he also has a lot of money in angel investments, which frankly can be like a lottery ticket. And what's also pretty wild is that he isn't making enough income on a monthly basis in order to cover his personal expenses. He's being very conscious about what he wants to spend on to make his life better, and he's betting on himself and knows that he's going to make more in the future. Remember, Dave currently has around 5 companies that he's running or he owns the majority interest in. And of those 5 companies, he's actually only paying himself from 2 of them, meaning the other 3 that he's investing in, he's not taking any income out.
I have to pull a very small amount from the overall net, basically like pull 200 a year or so. So like, why don't call it regular income is like 500 to 600 a year, pull like 150 to 200 a year. But like I earn that on interest. And so net we're saving anyway, but we're not like very intentional about it. The 2 that I take income from have investors. One of them, like I just bought the company back. It's kind of a turnaround situation. So I'm not taking anything from that. Basically you can't do that from companies that have investors. You can do that from ones that you mostly or wholly own. But the ones that I wholly own, like one is getting off the ground and the other is a turnaround. And so I'll do that in the future, but just not right now.
We've got to take a quick sponsor break, but hang on, because in a minute, we're going to get to my favorite part of the episode, which is Dave's decision to massively overinvest in himself.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Before the break, we mentioned Dave's monthly expenses. These are around $50,000 to $60,000 a month. A decent amount of that $60,000 is in housing expenses, but that doesn't just include his own stuff.
I bought my parents' house, so I took on their mortgage. That's like 40-ish grand a year. Then I have my own house, which is like 9 a month, call it like 100 a year.
And then there's the extras, which is the fun stuff.
We basically are discretionary spend of 150 a year on like fun, travel, random things that come up, you know, things like that.
Now, this is where we get to the stuff I've been teasing about the whole episode, the money that he's spending investing in himself and his wife. This is really fascinating. Listen to what Dave says.
I have made the decision in the last like 18 months, this is somewhat of a recent thing, to like massively overinvest in my wife and I as like a unit. I'm overinvesting in angel opportunities that I think are good. We have a personal assistant, an EA, and a chief of staff.
Explain what those 3 people do, because those all sound like similar things to me.
Yeah, so a personal assistant is like doing anything around the house, basically like house management, returns, chores, laundry, managing the cleaning crew, managing like...
Is that full-time?
35 hours a week, so practically.
Okay, almost.
Yeah.
Is that like a $30 an hour job?
35, yeah.
All right, so that's like a $70,000 a year salary if it's 40 hours a week, and that's awesome.
Yep, it's amazing. It's amazing. So there's that. There's the like an executive assistant, which is like scheduling, retreat planning, like stuff related to the business, much higher level stuff, HR, admin, all these sorts of things.
And the company pays for that.
Mm-hmm, company pays for that. And then we have a personal chief of staff. She helps with like planning higher level events that we want to do. She helps with like incubations. She's helping my wife who's like starting something new. She's like doing a bunch of boots on the ground stuff.
No way. Is that totally worth it?
I had the opportunity to buy back an old business that I started for basically nothing. And so I was able to do that and just like give it to her because I don't have time or capacity. And she like ran the acquisition and helped do everything on the other side of completing this for a completely seller finance deal where I've like put in zero of my own dollars and we'd basically have my old business back and a CEO in place. But like that transition couldn't have happened without the chief of staff.
Okay, that's insane to me, but that's awesome. And you're making me want to do it.
I recommend it. I really would.
So with his regular expenses and these investments he's making, Dave is looking at a spend of around $700,000 a year, which is a lot. Even though Dave has a ton of money in illiquid investments, and I think they are going to pay off, his monthly income doesn't actually cover that. But Dave has no hesitations.
Dude, it's insane. It's completely insane. But it's also kind of like awesome. Like we basically made an intentional decision that we were not going to optimize for saving money for 3 years. And we're just going to plow everything into like startup investments, home team, and building new stuff and things to make our lives great. We have like a high investment period. We're going to give it a 3 years run and we're like a year in.
And what's even more awesome is that he's being super conscientious about spending in order to buy back his time. That's his most valuable asset. It's something that I know I struggle with. Sometimes I get kind of tight and I don't want to spend money to save time. But Dave's being super specific and purposeful about it. For example, check this out. Here's how much time he spends doing household chores.
None. Literally none.
So like putting your clothes away, that's taken care of.
Yeah.
That's the dream. I got to do that.
Dude, I think if you looked at my life, you would be shocked at how little time I spend like taking care of myself, like from like a physical needs standpoint or doing chores or whatever. Practically, I'm working and then I'm like making sure I'm healthy physically or in socializing. And it's like nothing in between.
That's the best. I think that's great that you set it up that way. Did you read anything that encouraged you to do this?
No, I just like, to me, it's like I get so energized hanging out with people and working and like reading and learning and doing stuff like that. So I just want to spend more time doing that. I think that one mistake I see friends make who have done well is all of a sudden they have money and they start spending it in ways that like don't seem to improve their happiness at all. Nicer house, nicer car, go out to nicer restaurants, but they're like not that into cars. They travel too much to enjoy the home and they're like not really a foodie. And so for me, I'm like, I want to use these resources to spend as much time as I can doing stuff that I care about. And this is like a very natural output of it.
I think this is awesome. I think the way that Dave is being very purposeful is so amazing and inspiring. I think that if you have the ability to do this and you make a decision, I think X, Y, and Z will make me happy, and then you go out and do it, I think that is so awesome. And it's an experiment that if he wants, he can end anytime he wants to, but it's so cool that he's getting after it and he's actually trying to make his dreams a reality. And it also got me thinking a little bit because I think I do this and I think a lot of people do this, which is we have this idea of this life we want to live and we put it off. Even if we can't afford it at the present moment, we still put it off. And so I asked Dave, what's stopping you from selling the businesses now or to stop working and just to spend more? What are you holding off? Here's what he had to say.
Literally nothing. I don't think I'm putting off anything. I've wanted to run this experiment around over-investing in our personal team. We will buy a nice house when we have kids, but we don't need it right now. We don't need to like travel and do kind of what we want. Like I really don't think that we're putting off anything. But instead, I feel like we're running these experiments right now around how can we turn money into like better quality of life or more interesting life or any number of these things. And that's like, I want to keep running those experiments.
Why keep going? Why keep building?
Because I think it's fun. I think two reasons. Like I think it's actually fun. It gives me like meaning, purpose. It's exciting. It feels like good to exercise a skill set. And then secondly, like, you know, I think you're in this place too, whether you've thought about this way or not. I think you've probably met, and I've met people that just have retired and they'd become like boring rich guys. That's so not interesting. I think your life is infinitely more interesting, surrounded by amazing people when you're like in the arena trying to do stuff and trying to solve problems. And I think that just attempting even to do something hard or interesting guarantees that you're surrounded by other people that are also trying to like do hard, interesting things. And that's ultimately what brings me the most happiness.
I agree. So I took 6 or 12 or so months where I was like, a semi-retired state and I felt restless. And more importantly, I felt lonely. I felt lonely as shit. I'm like, I don't have any fucking friends. Like there's nothing, like, you know what I mean? And like, I have to start a company just to be around people who I enjoy. But I would say that it's a lot more fun when I don't need the outcome. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And I had the same thing as you where I'm like, if any of my future things work, that's icing on the cake. And in a weird way, it helps me succeed more. Do you know what I mean?
100%. I mean, this is actually why we took secondary early on is because our investors and advisors were like, if you take some off now, when some lowball offer comes in a year from now, you'll be able to say no to it because it won't change your life as drastically. And I think that that was totally the right move and the right advice. Like I think with some safety net, it allows you to play for a bigger game, whether that's like a larger prize of the Emser Road, a mission, like some systematic change that you want to see in the world, whatever. I think it becomes much more fun. It becomes more like a game.
Now, there's something important to consider, which is even though relative to the rest of his portfolio, he is very illiquid, he still has a ton of liquid cash behind him. Even though the bulk of his net worth is in privately held companies, he still was fortunate enough to take a little bit of money off the table and sell a portion of his businesses for cash. And I asked him about this. I asked him about advice that he would have for people who do have an opportunity to sell a portion of their business, even if it's at a lower valuation, but just the idea of taking money off the table. I wanted to hear his opinion on it.
If you have the opportunity to hit your number at some point, even if it means selling 40% of your company, I basically think that you'll never regret that. Like, I made a poor financial decision, purely speaking, by taking money off the table in 2018. And it was like, I've never once regretted that decision. I think it was the best decision I've made in my career, just as the like mental ease and comfort that you get that comes with that decision is so hard to put a price on.
And by the way, I completely agree with Dave. I've been in a similar position. I had a business that I felt could have kept growing and today would be worth a lot more when I sold it a few years ago, but I'm incredibly happy I did because when you do have an exit, it changes things. Now, in the future, for my future businesses, which is Hampton, I don't intend to sell that ever. Maybe if I get bored, I will, but it just feels nice to be able to grow a business from a point of financial security. I know that even if Hampton goes under, I'm gonna be fine. And frankly, it makes building the company way easier. There's no way to hide that. It's way easier because of that. I sleep a lot better at night and it helps me be a lot more on the offensive. But this podcast, it kind of has changed me because I like hearing how purposeful Dave is with his spending. A lot of times on this podcast and amongst my friends, we'll talk to people who spend a lot of money per month. I mean, we had Neil Patel and he kind of did the same thing where they don't even know where the money goes. I asked Neil, where does the money go? And he's like, I don't even know. It just kind of adds up. I love how thoughtful Dave is. I love this experiment that he's doing and he's inspired me to do something similar. And I don't think you need to be spending tens of thousands of dollars a month. I do think that let's say you want to do something that's $500 or $1,000 a month. If you want to do that and you think that's going to make you better, if you think that's going to make you happier or more productive, whatever it is, I think you should freaking do it. I don't think you should be afraid because you should hopefully set yourself up to where you can stop that experiment whenever you want. And I'm curious to hear what you guys think. I want to know, what do you guys think of Dave's experiment? Do you think that investing in himself is a good idea? Do you think that he actually should sell some of his companies to de-risk even further? What do you guys think he should do? And I want to know if you guys have an idea for an experiment, whether it's $100 a month, whether it's $100,000 a month, I don't care. If you have an experiment that you want to run, let me know. I want to hear what it is. You can find me at TheSamPar on Twitter. Or if you're on Spotify or YouTube or iTunes, just leave a comment. Let me know what you think about this pod. And I want to hear, what's your experiment? If you're listening to this and you run a company that does at least $2 million in revenue, you guys have to check out Hampton. That's my company. It's joinhampton.com. Hampton's a community and peer group for CEOs, founders, business owners, people like that. And we have conversations like this every day, conversations that you can't Google an answer for, conversations that you're kind of embarrassed to talk about with some of your friends who aren't in a similar position as you. A lot of the guests on this podcast, I found them because of Hampton. It's been a life-changing thing for me to be part of, to see how other people live. It's been both inspiring as well as helped me solve all types of problems that I have in my life and my business. And there's been many frame-breaking conversations that I've had. So check it out. It's called Hampton. Joinhampton.com. We have people who are running companies anywhere from $2 million all the way up to $200 million a year in revenue. And lastly, I got to give a shout out to Lower Street. Lower Street is the agency I hired to produce this podcast. It is a ton of work to make these podcasts, but it's pretty easy for me because Lower Street has made it very easy. They help write the podcast, they edit it, they help me find guests. It's made my life very, very, very easy. So if you're a company and you want a podcast, check them out. Lowerstreet.co/moneywise. They made my life very easy. And this podcast so far has been a huge success. So huge shout out to those guys, lowerstreet.co. And that's it. That's this episode. This has been MoneyWise. You can catch us next week for another episode.